Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Wednesday. Thanks for being with us. We are going to have Jody Jackson today. Always like talking with Jody. She's up in the Bay Area. Wanted to bounce some things off her with the Coyotes and the Diamondbacks and where they are after winning last night. And then Espo is in studio. Greg Esposito. It's always good to have Greg in. He is... Eric, how would you describe the podcast that he's doing, this national deal? Have you seen it?
I have heard it. It's like a roundtable Suns exclusive podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is your camera not on again? One of these days we'll have the camera ready to go at the start of the show. How about that? Yeah, so it's a national show. So, and Espo's done a nice job. You know, when he left the Suns, it was hard. I think it was really hard on him that when he left the Suns, but it was the right thing to do. And he still is very, very, very plugged in, dialed in. He's doing something with Eric Bledsoe today with us. Is that right?
I think he's taping something with Bled after our show ends at some point.
So and this is going to be not everything is hunky dory and how great it is. And Bled, we love you. And
I don't know the specifics of the interview. I just know there's going to be an interview.
He's not
going to
call him Bled all the whole thing like they're buds.
I hope not.
I hate those type of interviews.
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I wouldn't. That's not Greg.
No.
No. And I think Greg knows. He and I have disagreed. We're going to argue today, just so you know.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Because today...
I can already feel the tension in the studio, and the segment's still, what, 45 minutes away? Good.
I woke up at 3 a.m. this morning and just pounded out stuff on the Suns. Just went into the office.
Saw
and
that.
Just, it was there. You just wake up and you're like, you got to be bleeping kidding me. This is another year of us having to sit here. These poor fans that put down their hard-earned dollars to go watch this stuff and get the same drivel about how we're building for the future again. And there's probably going to be some big, long letter thanking Suns fans with the Suns logo at the bottom of it, published in the Arizona Republic, because they have a partnership, and they're not going to go hammer them over the head with a 2x4 like they should. You know, enough of this apologizing all the time, and we're just supposed to accept that it's been 7 freaking years of this. Those of us that have been here for, I don't know, a nanosecond or two, know that this organization, out of all of them in town, should never have been driven into the ditch like this was driven into the ditch. So when I get these people that say, oh, well, they were eliminated from the playoffs in March, why are you bringing this up today? Because today the season is finally over. And we can go through all the excuses. And yes, I was one that said, please lose games. And they didn't even go about that exactly correct. The dysfunctionality down there, man, oh, man. When I see some of these comments from Earl Watson, on ownership shutting down players, quote, that was like a right hook. I didn't see coming, but I got back up. Your own coach is talking about how you decked him. Quote, if it's up to me, everyone would play. They'd still be out there with our group building. Then you have this quote from Ryan McDonough. This is a real peach of a quote. And this Doug Howler had this. GM Ryan McDonough, quote, obviously our record is a little bit disappointing. A little bit disappointing, given the expectations we started the year with. Let me fill you in on what is a little bit disappointing. The general manager, a little bit disappointing. This is the second worst record in the entire NBA. And yeah, they intentionally lost games down the stretch and shut down players. It gave them a 55.8% top 3 pick in the draft lottery. Our record's a little bit disappointing. I'm a little, my steak is a little undercooked. My bed's a little bit unmade. The laundry's a little bit undone. It means it's not done. And you're going to give us a little bit disappointing? And your head coach is going to say, it was a right hook I didn't see coming? So, that speaks to me in the way of when you say you didn't see it coming, then what was the communication really like? How was the communication? I mean, I don't get where it is that anybody in their right mind can sit here and give me the same old thing about, well, they're building towards the future. Because, you know, and somebody help me out here. Is Alex Len coming off as a top 10 pick or a top 7 pick in the draft? I am supposed to trust this group? Is Brandon Knight showing anything at all? Anything at all to make me believe that that was a smart move? Is Isaiah Thomas doing anything at all to make me believe that that was a smart move? So when I get these people that it's sunshine and waffles and it's another crappy season, and oh, they're so close to getting it figured out, I don't know that. I do think they're closer in terms of talent, but it's one at a time. This is a league where you can get good in a hurry. Guys, understand this. Minnesota, Sacramento, Phoenix, the longest playoff drought now in the NBA. Minnesota freaking Timberwolves, Sacramento stinking Kings, and Phoenix. And we're supposed to sit here and say, oh, it's really not that bad. You know, this is just part of the process. We can finish our season, and we're going to put trash bags over our shoulders today and clean out our lockers, and we're going to say things like, it was a really tough year, really disappointed. Man, it was tough. It was tough. And somebody down there with a microphone is going to say to some player, how tough was it this year? And I'm just going to sit there and want to take this pen and run it all the way through from one ear to the other. How tough was it this year?
I knew it was bad, but when you put it in terms of not only not making the playoffs for 7 straight years, but being amongst the Timberwolves and Kings, that's not company you'd like to keep in the NBA. And that's ever. No offense to those franchises. I mean, if you're talking about the Kings of 15, 20 years ago, and if you're talking about the KG Timberwolves, but we're in a different time and this is a different space, and Ryan McDonough keeps saying the West is so tough, the West is so tough. Well, 7 years is a really long time. A lot has happened in 7 years.
And I get these apologists, and it's like, okay, please explain to me here how you can justify some of these moves. Okay? How can you do that? You know, I'm glad Greg's going to go catch up with Eric Bledsoe today, but I'm pretty sure it's not going to be anything earth-shattering. It's going to be a whole lot of, yeah, it was tough, man, and we'll see what's going on with my future here. It's probably not going to be, you know what, this is completely unacceptable. I would love it if a player today, if a guy like Devin Booker just stepped up into the mic and looked in the cameras and said, I'm not going to take any questions. I'm just going to tell you guys, this was completely, totally unacceptable. It's over. These losing ways are over. I will not let this happen again. This is my team. I am the leader of this team. I am the alpha male. I'm willing to take that on my shoulders. And I apologize to everybody who watched us this season. Because it was completely, totally unacceptable. If I'm the owner of this team, it would sure be nice if the owner of this team just called a press conference today and stood there and took it all. Just took it. And every last one of us that have our jobs to do, and those of us that have been here longer than a nanosecond, are all sitting there in the first two rows saying, can you please explain what happened this year? Can you please explain what happened the last 7 years? What are you going to do to fix this? Are you on the same page with your general manager and your head coach? Your head coach said, quote, that was like a right hook I didn't see coming. Did you fail to communicate properly with your head coach? Instead, we're going to get, well, you know, it was a tough year, but we're in position. We have assets moving forward. We're going to get all that stuff today. And tonight at 5 and 6 and 10, we're going to get a little soundbite about it's a tough year and we hope we get things turned around. And it's the same old slop every single year. And there's no accountability. There's none. Like, of all the teams that should be this bad, it should not be this one. It just shouldn't. When you have a roster of just 12 players to compete and you can't even figure it out to get into the playoffs for 7 straight years, that means you are incompetent. So yeah, Robert is making money hand over fist. Yeah, he does have a team that's worth north of $1 billion. Yeah, he probably has investors that are thrilled to death. And he's taken a once proud brand and just drug it through the dirt and thrown it along the side of the road. And every year we get the hope, and every year we get this letter about how we apologize and we're going to move forward, we're going to get this figured out.
Do you want to hear something really disturbing? Two things that I just stumbled across when I was doing some Suns research for the show.
Yeah.
No team in the NBA, including the Nets, gave up more points per game than the Suns.
I believe that.
Do you know how many games the Suns finished behind the Golden State Warriors in the West this year?
42 and a half.
Correct. 42 and a half games back. 42! That's half of the NBA season!
But go look at that number further and see how many games back did they finish from a playoff berth. Just making the playoffs.
27 games.
27 games out of a playoff spot.
27 games out of the playoff. 27 games out of the playoff spot, yeah.
Okay, out of the eighth seed.
Yep.
So what does that tell you? For us to sit here next year, because we've been doing this every year, I go on this rant, and nothing seems to change down there. They've got to improve enough to make, if they make the playoffs next year, then it's a positive step, right?
You can't see that happening, though.
Okay, so that's my point, is we're going to get a whole lot of, yes, we're building for the future. We're going to continue to get that drivel. We've gotten that drivel for years and years now. And nobody seems to want to hold these guys' feet to the fire. It's just kind of like, well, we believe in them, and they have this really good player in Devin Booker. And yeah, and guess what? Devin Booker's contract is ticking. Every year he's here, it's another year closer to being a free agent. You can tell me all you want he's restricted. You can tell me all you want how you control them. But is Phoenix really becoming a destination where a guy's going to want to stay for his entire career? Which, by the way, at one time it was. At one time, Dan Majerle cried his eyes out when he got sent to Cleveland when he was up in Flagstaff. At one point in time, and I want to hear this, yeah, you're living in the past. Colangelo's not the owner. We didn't win any titles with him. You tell me, where is this thing today? I mean, today should be a day of venom and anger. It just should be. Made every joke about tanking, made every joke about, you know, let's play. Whenever they win a game, it's been a bad night. You have to do something to pass what's another miserable day, another miserable year. And so now the season is over. So today I'm just pissed. Because to Eric's point, it's 28 games you got to improve on just to maybe make the playoffs next year. And I'm supposed to trust this group to figure it out? Jody Jackson is next from San Francisco.
She'll put you in a better mood. She always does.
Jody's great. We'll talk with Jody. That's on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Very pleased now to bring on board Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona reporter, anchor, mega talent. One day, play-by-play voice of something, in my opinion, I hope, football.
Mega talent.
Mega
I
talent.
Like
I could be your agent very easily. It was raining last night, right? I was watching the game. You were getting rained on?
Yeah. Yeah, it was raining. It was kind of like misting in the seventh inning, and it's kind of the type of thing where it's just swirling mist and then it would stop. And so I'm just down there and, you know, it's near the end of the game as it is. So I wasn't going to go upstairs. So then, but then like the bottom of the eighth or so, it started raining harder.
Yeah. And,
so and it was a little wet.
Are you worried about your appearance when that happens? Or are you just dug in doing your job and you don't care?
Yeah, I'm actually not worried about my appearance.
Atta girl. I like
that,
hearing that.
No, it's raining, so luckily I had a jacket with a hood, you know, so, yeah, I'm past that, which I think is a good thing.
I agree with you.
You're on TV, there are lights there, you look fine, most people look fine.
I saw you the other day, I think it was the game up at San Francisco, you looked very business. Did they change your look? Like
I wore a blazer. I don't wear blazers.
Yeah, what was that all about? Were you like you look like a CEO. I mean, I would say a CEO for United Airlines, but that's not a good joke today. So, no, you looked very.
I know. That's crazy.
You look very business-ish.
You know what's funny? When I worked in Buffalo, when I worked in the North, you know, it was like a lot of blazers and things. And then since I've been in Arizona, you know, and I feel like West Coast and California, you don't see many people wearing blazers as much, but it's cold here. So,
yeah.
Or not cold, but, you know, it's chilly. So I went with a blazer. Thanks for noticing.
Yeah, no, it was very sophisticated on your part. We're talking about Jody Jackson. The Diamondbacks off to a terrific start. Best start in team history. Isn't that 7-2? It ties the best start, right? Or it is the best start. Ties the best start.
I think 7-2 was 08. Yeah, I mean, they've never been, you know, I remember we were going through this a couple days ago and they were never 8-0. So 7-1 was time, you know, they had never been 7-1. So they didn't get that done. But, you know, it's been good. It really, there's a great vibe around this team right now. And I mean, it's winning does that, obviously, but I sense they're just more relaxed in a way. It's hard to explain it a little bit. It's kind of hard to put your finger on it.
Well, that's why I wanted to have you on the show. So you have to explain it. It might be hard for you, but you've got to explain it. No,
well,
in all seriousness.
I feel like they're more relaxed.
Yeah,
part of that is, if you're winning, are you more relaxed?
Yeah.
If you get off to a bad start, are you more tense? I don't, you know, we won't know that because they didn't, but I feel like it just seems a little different. Guys are more just sort of doing their thing, and it doesn't seem like they're pressing like in past, you know. I mean, I feel like you get off to a bad start, you're pressing from the get-go, so that's part of it. But I also think it has to do a little bit with the way that Mike Hazen and Torey Lovello, and I mean, some of the staff are the same, obviously. Dave Magadan is there. Mike Butcher is there. That's the interesting thing I was saying last night is you have a number of the same players here. You have some of the same coaches, and yet it feels really different. So it is kind of hard to describe in that way, but they're all performing at a higher level. Now, why are they doing that? Is it just expectations were off to start the season? Is it, I think, again, it goes back to Hazen and Lovello and maybe their message and how they, these guys carry out their business. But it's going well so far. And can't really argue with anything. And Torey has done a good job of sort of pushing the right buttons, and whether it's pinch hitter or bullpen. So far, so good.
Talking about Jody Jackson, Fox Sports Arizona. They have tonight's game, of course. They have all the games. Tonight, Shelby Miller is on the mound. Luis Gonzalez told me last September that last year's group was just odd. He said it was an odd collection. There were some odd balls. There were some odd players. Now, he didn't say anybody in particular. And maybe that's what it is. It was just an odd collection last year. But to your point, it's pretty much the same group of players. I'm curious, when you're in the locker room, is there somebody or some people that are a little bit more expressive, vocal, that are taking things a little more serious than even what I saw last year? When I was down there a few times, it was like guys had checked out. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting about the oddball comment, because, again, it is a lot of the same guys.
Right, right.
The bullpen, there were just young guys. Like, the bullpen was sort of a mishmash of guys that had to get called up because once they traded Clippard and Ziegler, who were you know, good additions to the bullpen. Those guys, Ziegler had been there, Clippard they added. But once those guys left, it was just a lot of young arms that maybe weren't even ready to be there. But that's interesting. I think that there are a lot of guys that are having fun in there right now, but they're not acting kind of, it's not craziness going on. It's
sure.
just more, it's there seems like a mature group. Jeremy Hazelbaker is actually kind of a character. He kind of walks, while I'm doing interviews, sort of roams around, like staring at the guys while I'm interviewing them. You know, yesterday, a lot of guys, I guess, showed up really early, and then they were kind of like, wow, you know, they're doing their work, but they're not, I don't sense they're in the cage constantly, and they're overworking, and I don't know that they were doing that before, but I feel like from the get-go last year with Chip, the fact that he got on the defensive right out of the gate.
Day one, he was off. He was on the defensive.
And at the time, Brad, in all honesty, I thought that it was overblown. I really did. When everyone was going crazy with that, on the media really grabbed onto that, and I was kind of like, that's overblown. But I don't know if it was now, looking back, because he seemed like he had a nervous energy all the time. And then Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa and just the combination there, I'm not sure. Let me put it this way. I don't really know how at the time they seemed to be working together okay, but it doesn't seem like the well-oiled machine that Hayes and Lovello is. You know
well,
what I mean?
Jody, last year on opening day, even in spring training, I was told by people in San Diego that Dave's wife wanted him to come back and run the agency. And so what did Dave do after he got bounced here? He went back and he ran the agency. And it was out there last March. So, you know, I think you're dead flat onto something here, and that.
Well, I also think when you have three, and I think even the Diamondbacks have said something to the effect of maybe too many voices or something like
that. Yeah,
that's
true.
I'm not sure. I don't want to quote anyone, but I think Derek Hall said something to the effect of, and maybe that was, you know, you bring in Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart. These guys have great pedigree in the game of baseball. And then you have a new manager in Chip Hale. So, you know, I'm not sure that combination, when you look at what you're seeing now, you know, you kind of look at what's working, what's not working. But I don't want to necessarily focus only on what's different from last year. Obviously, if Zach Greinke had gone out last year and pitched a shutout in game one and not given up three homers, maybe everything's different, you know. And that just comes down to, like, he's placing his pitches in different spots. So, everything really, it the first week, though, I do think it's huge. It sets a tone, especially
sure.
with a new group. When you have a new group of leadership, it sets a tone. And so I think Torrey said the other day, he said, you couldn't have asked for a better opening week. I mean, they could have gone undefeated, and that would have been better maybe, but it really has been very positive. Because and you look back and you say, well, if everything had been different, would that have been a situation last year too? But I think focusing on this group, don't underestimate also the fact that Daniel Descalzo, you know, Hazel Baker, the veteran bullpen guys.
Yeah.
There are more veterans now in the clubhouse, and Jeff Mathis, Chris Iannetta, those guys are huge. And
let me jump in on something with you though. So, and this is about Jake Lamb, and this was last night. So Jake Lamb is becoming, in my opinion, there was this question about could he be an everyday guy a couple of years ago? Did he have a hole in his glove? And I think he answered that. I'm not going to say he's going to win a gold glove. I could be dead flat wrong on that. He might. I don't know. Last night, though, he comes up with the big hit, and he's finding this lineup has a few more pieces now rather than it just being waiting for Paul Goldschmidt to do something big, or he was Manny Tomasi that home run or strike out. There's some depth now up and down this lineup.
Well, and I'll say this. When you have A.J. Pollock and David Peralta healthy,
it helps, sure.
It's just a totally different lineup. Yeah, because now, I mean, you look at last night how they loaded the bases for Jake Lamb. I mean, they had, you know, he felt like he had to walk Goldie, and then Jake Lamb's going to see a pretty decent pitch. I mean, what's he going to do? The other option is walk in a run. So, you know, that's something that the team could not control last year, is that Pollock was out, Peralta missed time.
Right.
Even when Peralta was in there, he was hurting. And you're right, though. Everybody's contributing. You're seeing, you know, even Mathis and Iannetta contribute hits that were timely.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing Descalzo and Hazel Baker come off the bench. Owings is off to a really good start. So, you know, and Tomas is actually hitting .500, like, in the last five games. So once he, you know, you're seeing now when he, with Tomas, he was always the case of, he's going to hit the ball. If he barrels it up, it's going to go a long way. But he was swinging and missing a lot, or he was laying off the, you know, laying off good pitches and swinging at bad pitches. So once he gets better at that, you know, I think you could easily see another 30 home run year here.
Okay, so let me jump over to this question on the Diamondbacks, and I've got some things with the Coyotes I want to run by you. Is this a housing bubble with them? Meaning, are we going to be sitting here a month from now and say, boy, they got off to a great start? You're there every day. You see this every day. The easy answer, because you're there and you see the Diamondbacks, is, oh, this is going to keep going. What's the straight answer on this?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, right now what they're doing is funny because it's such a cliche, but it's literally one game at a time. And
mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing for me, as much as the offense has been great, I think just the fact that the pitchers are pitching deeper into games and seem to be limiting the damage a little bit more, that's going a long way right now. And if that can continue, you know, anything's possible. This team obviously wasn't expected to be with the Dodgers and Giants. It's supposed to be, you know, Dodgers and Giants and then the other three teams down below. But if they stay healthy and continue to pitch like this, and I want to give her a lot of credit, I think, to the catchers, because I think a lot of it is they're taking some of the pressure off the pitcher. I have noticed a little bit less sort of shaking off of guys, and they're just delivering the pitch, you know. Obviously, Zach Greinke's very particular in how he's, you know, delivering the game and knowing what pitch he wants. But I think that's huge. I think the pitching staff, that had to be the focus. They didn't change a lot. You know, they added Taiwan Walker. They, you know, Shelby Miller, I think he's got his mind right now. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, I guess at the end of this month, if they're still performing pretty well, you look at it and say, okay. I mean, you look at the Giants last year, they got off to a great start. The first half was amazing, and then they almost didn't make the playoffs.
Right.
So,
well, and Boach has shown.
It's hard to really say.
Yeah, no, I'm just curious. Okay, over on the Coyotes, so are you of the opinion that Shane Doan is done?
Well, I think he is, although it is a
No. Let me stop you there. I think he is, although. Give me the why you think he is, and then give me the although. Why do you think he's done?
I think that this season for him was kind of hard because he wasn't as productive. He wasn't getting the ice time. I think it was hard for him to enjoy it as much as he enjoys everything. This is a man that enjoys life. I mean, he enjoys meeting strangers, enjoys playing the game, all the things that
good
come
man,
along with it.
Really good person.
He is, and he just really, you can't really instill that in someone. It has to be, it's within them. His parents obviously did, but I mean, it's not like, you know, a lot of guys, I think they learn to do the sort of PR stuff and like it and smile, but it's like you can tell he really enjoys everything. But I don't know if he enjoys playing hockey kind of the way that he did this year, where he wasn't as productive. So maybe that's something that would be the deciding factor for him. But I will say this, he doesn't seem completely sure. I mean, even on I thought it was a great post-game interview that Tyson and Todd did with Tyson Nash and Todd Walsh. They had Shane Doan on the set after his game, his potentially last game.
With his kids.
And then his family came on.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was great.
His family, his wife, Andrea, his kids. And he said something like, I last week I was done, and then 2 days later I was still going to play. And he just wanted to, I don't blame him for wanting to sort of have it settle in his mind. But I guess the question is, if it's not settled right now, then when would it be settled?
Yeah, so, he should go call Carson Palmer and have the conversation with him. In a sense, I'm serious, because I think anytime a player, I've found this through the years of doing this, anytime a player is asked about it or thinks about it the day after, bad time. You've got to go clear your head, and you've got to go take a break. You've got to get away from this. You got to go be by yourself, not with your agent. You got to be with your circle, whoever's in his circle, and then go have the dinner with John Chyka. I mean, they're going to go have a dinner. They're going to talk about it. That's fine. I'd say, you know, to move the organization forward where Shane is, give us an answer by May 1st, and then we can move forward. Or by the end of the playoffs. I think that's very fair.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan, you know. I mean,
that's why I can be your agent, Jody. That's why I can do this for you. I can be Shane's guy. I mean, come on. This is sage advice here.
Job on your resume?
Sure, why not? Why not?
No, I mean, I think that's fair. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do, but I guess I feel like if you're asking me to commit to an answer on it,
yes, I am asking you
to
commit.
I would have to say at the end of the day he'll probably say it's time to retire, because I think what he's going to realize is that he's a guy that, like I said earlier, loves to play the game so much, but you do have to give it up at some point. So when is that point? You know, and I think that's the hard thing that he's trying to come to grips with, is that he probably never wants to give it up.
I saw Steve Nash during the Final Four, and it was over at a little gym, and he was in town just for the day for a few hours. And I said, how did you handle post-retirement? He said, it was so tough. He just shook his head. He's like, I had no idea how tough it was going to be. Now, if Shane walks away from it and then he's sitting there 10 games in the next year and they're playing the LA Kings and he gets the juices flowing and there's an injury or two, you know, is he going to have that internal tug? If he says, no, I'm done, I'm going to go work in the front office, which he could he go be on the broadcast team? Yeah, he could. Could he go do something away, go ride horses for a year or two and take time off? Yeah, he could. Go be a dad and come back. But I think his retirement pondering is it's really different than most guys, because he's just wired differently, I think, than most guys. Would you agree on that?
Yeah, I think so, because, I mean, although there's a lot of guys that love the game like that, but it's funny how you bring up Steve Nash, and just, I think, talking to many athletes over the years, it's so hard, and think about it. We watch our kids play games, right? We watch kids play sports. These guys have played a sport since they were children. They're playing a kid's game out on a professional field. They've been, you know, all their lives. it's unlike any job in the world when you play a game. It's got to be hard to give it up and sort of realize I'm just getting too old to do this. That's kind of, you know, most people are peaking in their career in their 40s and 50s, right? Or even 60s. You're peaking at your job.
You and I are hoping so.
Well, also, maybe not in broadcasting, right? That's a little different. Yeah. But, I mean, you look at Bruce Arians and coaching or just any, if you're a CEO, if you're a marketing person, if you're a, whoever you are, you know, you're peaking as you gain knowledge and things like that. These guys rely on their bodies, and that's sort of a, it's different than a lot of people can relate to. So
all right.
It's hard.
One last question. Are you going to go for a run today? You have a night game. Is it still raining?
Question.
Is it still raining?
It's very gloomy. It's very gloomy out.
You're still running, right? You're not mailing that in, right?
Well, it's almost like you knew about this. Did you know about my recent running experience?
I didn't. What happened?
So I'll try to make this.
No, wait. I did see you ran with one of your kids at the Diamondbacks
event. Yes. Yeah. So I haven't really been running. I guess I had. Last summer, the whole summer long, I had a hip impingement, and it was hard to, I couldn't really run. It was, I finally, after 6 months, I figured out what it, I went to, they diagnosed it with an MRI. I have a hip impingement. So I went to physical therapy from like, so on, when they actually told me about the impingement, I went running 4 miles because it was kind of like a take that type of thing.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Which it hurt even worse. So
yeah.
that was in November. I was like, just going to be a rebel and going to run and be mad. And I ran 4 miles and then it hurt. And so I went to physical therapy. I got a cortisone shot and I did that for like the whole winter. Right. So leading up to baseball season to try to get back to normal.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to, I haven't run since that day in November. And then my son who has never run a race, but he knew I did the D-backs race against cancer every year that they've had it. But this year I wasn't planning to do it because it was a getaway day. And just, you know, between not running and the getaway day, I am doing Girls on the Run, which is a 5K at the end of April.
So go run today. Go run today.
I might run today. So I ran, though, the 5K. It's kind of sad. Talk about feeling old. And I mean, I used to five miles would be like nothing, right?
Yeah.
But when you don't run since November, I'm still a little sore. Okay. So.
But your hip is fine.
I do.
Your hip is fine.
The hip is off and on.
All right.
But I'm just, you know, staving off surgery or something like that. But it is, you know, San Francisco, it's a little gloomy right now, but it's always so beautiful here. So I probably will go out and jog a little bit.
Go do it.
Do a little exercise.
That little voice in the back of your head is me saying, come on, get off your backside and go do it. So
you're my agent after all.
That's right. You are a mega talent after all. So see you later.
You're sweet. You're sweet. Thank you, Brad.
Bye. It's Jody Jackson there from San Francisco. Eric, we could have Jody on like every week, like every day. I could have sat here and done another 10 minutes with her easy.
Interesting stuff about the inner workings of the Diamondbacks front office
last year.
I thought that was very, very unique.
Here's the thing on that. I am never going to be one who sits here and says everything is great when it's not. And when things are great, then they're great. But explain why and give context. I know she sees it and she's great. So always like having her on. Espo is going to come in here in a few minutes, and it's not going to be pancakes and sunshine today because the sun's drastic makeover continues. We're into year 7. This is like the money pit, right? Well, this year we actually got the refrigerator fixed, but the hot water heater went out and everything else. So we got to do an autopsy on the suns, which isn't going to be pleasant. That's next. All right, Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Greg Esposito, as promised, joins us now in studio. Espo came on board here December?
Yeah.
Shows what I know. I'm just running the place. I write you a check, and I'm like, December? I don't know. Sports360AZ.com, Suns columnist. But he has a, in addition to, and on top of, a podcast that Espo said, I want to start doing a podcast. So this has been 3 months, 2 months?
It's been about 2 months. We're on episode 9 right now.
Episode 9, and your podcast is All Things Suns.
Yep.
You call it the...
Solar Panel.
It's very good. And who is on the solar panel?
It's myself, along with a gentleman named Tim Tompkins. He's a radio host in Florida. Grew up a big Suns fan. Met him online. And then Dave King, the proprietor of Bright Side of the Sun. And
he does a good job.
And one of my mortal enemies. So it makes fun.
You guys don't like each other?
Oh, we joke about it. Online,
no,
we joke
No,
about
you're supposed
it,
to not like each other.
Well, I don't like certain things about Dave. It makes for a good podcast. Yeah. I'll say that much for it.
You don't like certain things about what I do.
Well, it's true.
I mean, you think this is all pancakes and sunshine with this basketball team.
No, I don't think it's all pancake and sunshine.
They're turning the corner. This is great.
Also, where's the phrase pancakes and sunshine come from? I've never heard that
waffles
term phrase.
Waffles and sunshine. Waffles are a good thing. Pancakes are good things.
As a fat guy, I like both, but continue.
Well, I've had my fair share of pancakes, so I'm right there with you. Okay, so in all seriousness, this is the day after the wreckage, okay? We sat here back in February, at least I did, and say, please lose. So they lost. They weren't going to make the playoffs. So today I write a, hey, Robert, you missed the playoffs again column. And I get people, they're all mad at me because, well, they already missed, and this is great that they did this. You know, Greg, at the end of the day, it's 7 freaking years of a franchise that I never in my lifetime imagined would be the Titanic. And it's only the Kings and Timberwolves that have had a longer playoff drought than our hometown heroes. And I want Robert Sarver to step to a podium and answer questions. And you know he won't. And the organization will probably put out a nice long letter that they'll put in the Sunday Arizona Republic. And Robert will sign it and it'll say, we're going to get this figured out. And I've seen that crapola. Mm-hmm. And when I see Ryan McDonough say to Doug Howler, obviously our record is a little bit disappointing. A little bit disappointing, really. I see Earl Watson say that it was like a right hook I didn't see coming from ownership telling him not to play his players. I'm going to throw all that at you and just let you take off with it, and please convince me that all is well.
Well, A, the note won't actually be from Robert Sarver. There's some great PR people over at the Suns that'll write a fantastic note.
It'll be from Robert. And we know that's coming, right?
Yes. Oh, I'm sure. It
Sunday
was,
paper.
Like clockwork, it always happened the 5 years I was there. So you want to feel a little bit more depressed? You asked me to make you feel better. I'm not.
Make me feel better.
The Suns have missed the playoffs 20 times in their franchise history. 8 of those times have happened in the last 9 years. Wrap your mind around that. Now, I totally get it that this year they've missed it for the 7th straight time. There's a lot of frustration for that. I don't have a problem with this season. For me, the problem was the previous 6 because they hadn't committed to this plan to actually lose games and try to get better by getting a high draft pick. It was try to wind up in the middle and try to pretend you're trying to make the playoffs and not get a high enough pick to really have an impact. Now, they got lucky with Devin Booker. Let's not act like that was some stroke of genius and it was all planned and let's get the 13th pick and we're going to get a superstar, potential superstar. No, that was pure luck in that case. This is the first year that the Suns committed to a plan that you can truly rebuild with. That's why I don't have a problem with this season. The previous 6 are where I have a problem. And I have a problem with the quote from Ryan McDonough because I don't quite understand how this year was a surprise. Nobody was expecting him to be any good this year. It was the last 6 years where everybody picked him to be good to make the playoffs. Now, Earl Watson is a guy I have a great deal of respect for.
As do I.
I like his attitude.
As do I.
But if he was really blindsided by what management did, he's not living in the same reality that we all are. Everybody saw this coming because if they didn't do that, they would have finished ahead of the Lakers, potentially with a team like, you know, the Kings or whoever getting in there, and they would have wound up with a 5th or 6th or 7th pick again and would have been stuck in this perpetual loop of not getting a good enough guy to change anything.
You mean Alex Len was not a good pick?
No, and I feel bad for that guy because he's saddled with the expectations of being a number 5 pick, but he happened to be picked in one of the worst drafts we've seen in the last decade. He was probably a 10 to 15 kind of pick, and instead he gets picked 5th because there was no talent in that draft.
Okay, so I'm hearing you go on here, Espo, and you sound like this is all good then, what happened this year. You're fine with this because they committed to a plan. You see a plan.
Yes, finally there is a plan to try to get a superstar. Now, I think Devin Booker, I didn't buy into Devin Booker going into this season. I thought at best he's a 1B. He's a Klay Thompson. He's not a guy that's going to lead your franchise to the promised land. This year, he changed my opinion a little bit. I think he could be on the cusp of being a superstar. He's not a superstar yet.
But he scored 70 points in a game.
That's great.
According to fans, I'm giving you the fan thing. They think he's there. He's not there.
When nobody else can score and the next guy in that game had 12 points for you, there's a reason Devin Booker scores 70 points in a game. He has shown me that the ability to kind of evolve into a potential star.
So help me out here on something. So Eric astutely pointed out.
Wow, Eric astutely pointed out something.
Eric astutely pointed out something. That the Suns finished 28 games out of the eighth spot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? 28 games. Do you see a 28-game improvement?
Not next year.
From here to next year. So what we're saying is, get ready for 2019.
I think they might be a 500 team next year, depending on where the lottery balls go. Because just because they finished with the second worst record doesn't mean they're getting the one or two pick. They could get
they're going to get the right pick either. Yeah. Doesn't mean they're going to choose the right guy.
They could screw up.
Like Minnesota did with number one overall pick. So get my guy Lonzo Ball here and all settled.
Oh, you're a Lonzo Ball guy? No, I would not touch that guy for anything.
Come on, Espo. Not what do you mean, anything? Are you serious?
No.
You take Lonzo Ball, you trade Eric Bledsoe, and you are able to turn this thing like that.
No, I take Fultz, or I deal the first or second pick to the Lakers, who are going to be hungry if they have the third pick, get a quality player, drop back at a guy like Josh Jackson to take that small forward position.
Josh Jackson, are you kidding me?
Josh,
another Kansas guy? I can't trust another Kansas guy. I've had enough Kansas guys. What about this Klay Thompson stuff of coming here? I've been hearing that.
Now, where are you hearing that?
Go chase Klay Thompson. I'm like, what do you mean the Warriors are going to break it up and go to get Klay Thompson?
Why do you need Klay Thompson?
I don't know why you don't need Klay Thompson here.
There's a lot. Everything rides on March 16th in the NBA draft lottery.
May 16th.
May 16th.
By the way, what are you going to be doing May 16th? Like candlelight vigil?
I'm probably going to be.
Picture of Robert, Robert. Good luck.
Robert's the good luck charm? No, all right. Believe me, I'm as much a Jerry guy as anybody. I just happen to have Robert sign my paychecks for 5 years.
Listen, you, Mr. Espinoza, you're going to get this right.
Look, I think what I'll be doing is hiding under a desk on May 16th because if you've been a Suns fan for any period of time, you know this likely isn't going to go well. You're going to wind up with a fourth or fifth pick, and we're going to be stuck there.
Seriously, we should go get like a table at Marley's and just have like whoever wants to show up. We'll just have like a little get together. We'll just hang out and we'll be like, oh no, we suck again. Oh no.
I think we should Facebook live stream a whole pity party because
We have to do set it up in front of the arena, have the arena behind us.
You find the sponsor, I'll be there.
We go Tilted Kilt, now Tilted Kilt girls jumping around and all that stuff. But no, seriously, May 16th is becoming like the biggest day in Suns recent history.
Outside of the coin toss, it's going to be the biggest because it either will be what defines, it will define the next decade for the Phoenix Suns, good or bad. And if they get a top two pick and they can find,
and they take
make
Lonzo
the right
Ball,
choice,
then
it's
all
not
taken.
Lonzo Ball.
It's all taken
no,
care of.
No, it's not Lonzo Ball. You really want to deal with LeVar Ball and Lonzo. And
LeVar's
when
not dribbling up the court.
Listen, when you get a guy trying to force his way to the Lakers, the only thing worse than either getting the fourth or fifth pick or screwing up a top two pick is getting the first pick, drafting Lonzo Ball, and 4 years later watching him walk to the Lakers. I don't want to see that.
I happen to agree with you on that. I just know it's a hot button of yours, and I happen to like Lonzo Ball. I think Lonzo Ball is terrific. But I think with what's going on with Brand Ball that I'd probably stay away from. I look at Markelle Fultz, and I'm not sure about Markelle Fultz. I'm not sure about it.
That's why I think you're probably better off trading the one or two pick, moving back, and getting talent at the same time.
But you'd keep Bledsoe here.
You're a Bledsoe
apologist.
I would personally. If you think—
Bad knees and all.
You know what? I trust the Suns training staff.
His agent is LeBron's agent. He wants big lights, big city. You don't trade him now and get what you can?
I It depends. If you were sitting,
oh, depends. So now you're open to it.
I'm open to anything that makes this team better. I don't want to.
You're not
going to
trade Devin Booker.
No, no.
Okay, but you would trade Eric Bledsoe if it made you better.
Anybody but Devin Booker is on the table this offseason. But it depends on what you get.
You don't want Brandon Knight here anymore?
No, I'd rather. I literally would trade him for a 2052 second round pick. I don't care.
When
anything.
I said Brandon Knight, your head just about.
Brandon Knight is a very nice man and a terrible player on this team. That's just the way it is.
Wow.
He's
harsh.
Been terrible.
Okay.
Look, if you look at it, you know what the talk's going to be if the Suns get the one or two pick and the Lakers fall back to four. It's going to be, we could have had the one or two pick and the fourth pick, but we got Brandon Knight instead. You really want to deal with the whole summer of that? No. I hope the Lakers get the third pick and the Suns deal Brandon Knight and we never have to think about it again.
Okay, briefly.
Yes.
Should Earl Watson return?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think Earl Watson showed that he is very capable of being an NBA coach?
I wouldn't say very. I think he showed that there's flashes of it. But the way I look at Earl Watson is I very much think he's like in life, sometimes you have those relationships where it's not Mr. Right, it's Mr. Right Now. And you're with this person.
You kind of have
person.
That with Eric, but that's okay.
Well, you've had that with Eric for a very long time. But yeah. I think he's the guy that is here for now. And when it's time to win, he's probably not the guy.
Okay, but is he the guy with Ryan McDonough and Robert Sarver? Now, these comments that he's made, do you think that privately they're like, dude, what is your problem with us? Do you think when they beat Oklahoma City last week after losing 13 in a row and then they turn around and win another game, was that him saying to them, screw you?
No, because really he was going to be able – they got lucky that they won those two games with the roster that they put out there. There wasn't anything that Earl – if Earl Watson had that much magic to win, they would have won 50 games this year with the roster they gave him. He didn't have anything to do with that. And if
nothing to do with it.
With winning those two games?
Yeah, he didn't have anything to do with it.
No. In the end, the players go out there. Coaches have a minimal impact when you're as bad as the Suns are right now. He's building the culture and the attitude, which I like.
So this is not pancakes and sunshine?
No, it's not. Okay. And if I've given that if you've thought that from me, you haven't listened well enough.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I need to listen more.
Yes.
Okay. Is this what you're like every day?
Yes.
Every day?
Yeah. Well,
you might want to come on here more often.
Well, if you didn't
invite
me.
You might want to swing by here more often.
If you had listened when I hosted. If you had listened when
what?
I hosted for you, you would have heard that I do this on a regular basis.
What?
So I'm around whenever you need me.
Bye. Thank you. There's Espo. That's good. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. This has to be one of my more favorite shows in the last few weeks. Between Jody talking about her running stuff and stuff behind the scenes of the Diamondbacks and watching your head almost explode, it's good. Eric Sorensen produces this fine radio stream digital program. Jared Nielsen's our chairman of the board. We appreciate him and appreciate you being with us. Thanks.